Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show is Adam Wasserman, an attorney and managing partner of the Education Justice Law Group. He helps parents of kids who need special education get that extra attention in school that they're entitled to legally. We talked about ADHD medication, which he says a school should never pressure on a parent or student to take, what teachers and administrators are required to do for your kids, the issue of bullying, and a lot more. I learned a lot, so I hope you do too. Enjoy.
This work I do really changes people's lives.
Yeah.
There's nothing more important than this gritty period of a child's life where they're getting information, they're learning to socialize, they're understanding how people interpret them. It's more important than religion, it's more important than money, it's more important than family, because that time of their life, they model everything around. And when it's messed up, quite often, they're messed up. And when a teacher says, put them on drugs, well, we're really not dealing with anything. And I'm not against drugs, but the recommendation has to come from the right people.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe we can start with that. Let's talk about that. Because I find that, isn't it the case where most ADHD diagnoses like are noticed in school, right? Like most of the time for a kid, if they are struggling to focus, it's first noticed in a classroom, right?
A lot of times it's not noticed.
Oh, or not,
ADD then. Is one of these elusive topics. There's three types of ADD, as a matter of fact. There's the attentional component, there's the hyperactivity component, and then you can have both of them. And if someone doesn't have the hyperactivity component and they look nice and they speak nice and they wear nice clothes and aesthetically they're very pleasing, the last thing someone's going to say is that person doesn't understand what's going on. They're lazy. They need to listen more. They need to work harder. They need to sit up and they need to pay attention.
Yeah.
But attentional dysregulation, that form of ADD is what makes life impossible for people. It's like you see it coming, you try to grasp the math problem, and then it just disappears, and you're like, I don't get it. And that, untreated, leads to chronic bullying, it's proven, and it follows children. It's just not like you're bullied in one place. It leads to anxiety, it leads to depression, it leads to self-harm, it leads to self-hate. It is having the intelligence to be able to do things, but every time the ball flies by you, you can't catch it. And that's why we get these brilliant kids, and nobody knows they're brilliant, because they act like they don't understand anything. And it's not they can't understand it. The information's just not reaching them. It's getting lost in the communication.
Right, so the way that they're in a classroom, sat at a desk, forced to just focus on the board and ingest this information in that traditional way maybe isn't always the best way for every kid to
ADD,
learn.
Well, ADD, if you would think of a bar graph, and
I'm just going to move this, you're fine. I'm just going to move it towards you if you, Yeah.
And the bar graph, each bar graph represents, each, column on the bar graph represents ways we learn, auditory, visual, experiential, the ability to focus, the ability to interpret, the ability to read and understand. Attentional ADD, where someone has an attentional disability, cuts right through all those. It stops them. So even if I have a 160 IQ, if I have attentional ADHD, it doesn't matter. I can't use the horsepower. And that's where, and that's where the medicine starts coming in. The medicine is meant to remedy that by increasing the uptake of neurotransmitters in the brain, which lends to stronger cognitive ability, stronger focusing abilities.
Mm-hmm. So do a lot of parents come to you and say, the school's suggesting or pressuring me to go see a psychiatrist and maybe get my kid on medication, but we don't want to do it.
Well, yes, they do. And the first thing I tell them is your school has no business saying those words to you at all.
Oh, they're
ever.
Not supposed to.
Never. ever, even a school nurse isn't supposed to suggest it.
What are they supposed to do?
Not that.
Nothing.
Not nothing, but not that. The choice to take medicine is a very private choice. It's a family choice, and it should be done after careful consultation with people trained in the field to do that. Here's the thing. Schools are not allowed to diagnose children with anything. That's the wrong word. Schools talk in terms of eligibility, meaning this child reads too slow. He's eligible to get reading help. Not this child reads too slow. There's a problem with his brain.
Gotcha.
Do you understand the difference?
Yeah, they can point out things that they've noticed, but they can't necessarily
in
say.
In an educational, it's never, ever about diagnoses.
Yeah.
A parent should never, ever go to a meeting at school and have the school talk about medication. What it's about, what schools are supposed to offer, are educational or therapeutic interventions, which means the brain works this way today. We're going to work real hard. We're going to roll up our sleeves, and we're going to try to get the brain to be more efficient the next day. No one at a school, unless it's a therapeutic boarding school or a therapeutic day school, and this is even debatable, has the permission to say, your child needs to be on Ritalin, your child needs to be on Adderall, your child needs to be on antidepressants. Never, ever. And if the school does recommend that, they are out of bounds and out of line.
That's interesting because, honestly, I feel like that happens all the time.
It does happen, especially in the poor neighborhoods.
Oh, interesting. Because
you have mass crowd management.
Gotcha.
And those drugs are cheap and plentiful now. Mm-hmm. And they do help people. I took those drugs for 20 years. Without it, I wouldn't have gone to law school. I wouldn't have built my company. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been able to achieve the milestones. And then later in life, I found ways where I do not need those medications. And I'll be honest with you, at 52, I focus and listen and pay attention better than I have in my entire life without pharmaceutical assistance.
Really?
Really. My memory is sharper than it's. When I was a kid, I couldn't sit for 3 minutes. When I was in my early 20s, I couldn't. But now I have more brain power than I ever have. And there's reasons for it. Mm-hmm. And it's important people know about those things.
Yeah, it seems like if you're a parent, and that's a tough position to be in, if the school is saying, hey, you know, your kids, they're not doing well. They're not going to pass. They're not going to go to the next grade.
If schools are recommending that your child needs medication, what that really needs is the child's not getting the services they're supposed to be getting at the school.
And what would those services be instead?
Well, you know, there's a range. And for the length of this podcast, I'm not going to get into a legal dissertation with you. But we have general education students and we have special education students. Mm-hmm. People are so scared of special education. That word, it just rings fear within people, but it's not supposed to. When I was a kid, special education meant you went on a special school bus to a special school with kids that you couldn't talk about in a public setting, and that's what it's meant. But that's not what it means. All it means is the district has the requirements to educate you in the least restrictive environment, which means in the class with everybody else as much as possible, with services like speech or occupational therapy or behavior or reading or math to get you to your potential. It's not about you need to take medicine. It's about how do I get the child mm-hmm. to potential. And potential is another conundrum, how you define it, but it's really about using educational and psychotherapeutic services. How do we get a child to their potential? And is medication part of that? Maybe, but that's not up for the school to decide ever. Never.
So that is something that maybe after a parent is set, maybe they create an individualized education plan with the school for their kid and they're doing some other steps to kind of help them get through school and in the best way that they know how. If they still notice that there's something, then the parents, they should make the decision to potentially.
I am the poster child for hyperactivity. I had a traumatic brain injury before I was 1 year old. And I sat in those schools hearing them tell my parents, he needs to be on medication. And you know what? My parents listened. Mm-hmm. And the first time I had depressive episodes was after I started taking that medicine. I would take it. I would completely lose sense of myself. I would lose all my spontaneity, all my creativity, and I felt zombified. But it was either that or the school saying to my family, I want him out of this class. I want him out of this school. He doesn't belong here. And schools still operate that way today. Not all of them. There are some very good programs. And so when they say, we want him out of here, have you ever thought about medication? The parents are like, I can take a pill and it can fix it. But Kelly, our brains are plastic. In the purest sense of the world, not only are they plastic, they are self-healing. Like, for example, you know, if you take a plant and you cut off a stem, mm-hmm. it grows back. Our brains are kind of the same way. We have the ability to be one way another day. And with certain therapies and interventions, our brain can go the other way. And I'm not saying Wilt Chamberlain could ever be a jockey. It's not possible. Uh-huh. But we have the ability to overcome and substitute. And we also have the ability to dream and set goals and realize who we want to become in this world. And while medication may be a part of it, it doesn't teach children those essential skills. It really doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you talk about, how old were you when you first were?
Eight.
Eight.
Well, first my mother used to give me coffee and she'd sneak it into my chocolate milk and I'd go, that's not chocolate milk. And she'd be like, shut up and drink your chocolate milk. And my twin brother would be sitting across from me and I'd switch our drinks and he'd go, Mom, that's not chocolate milk, that's coffee. And that didn't work. Yeah. And then she was told at school medicine might be a good idea for me and that's what they did. I'd take it, I'd be zombified, or one morning I'd flush it down the toilet and I'd be picked up early and sent home. Because sitting still was so hard for me and listening. I have both, by the way. I have hyperactivity ADD and attentional ADD. But for me, I feel so grateful because my disability has become the driving force behind my life. Mm-hmm. And I get to give kids access to things that they otherwise wouldn't get because of my experience. I don't get stock options in my work, but I do get to see change. And in my area of the law, we see change fast, like within 90 days.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm.
So is that kind of what led you to this work, is your own experience in the school system? And
yeah, well, I know there's a better way. I think our education system is obsolete. There's no reason to keep 30 kids in the class 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, when only a handful need that much instruction. Why can't we take the kids that need that type of instruction, give it to them for 5 days a week, 6 hours a day, and let the other kids who have no problem have a teacher for an hour a day, mm-hmm. instead of saying medication?
Yeah.
We live in an age of adaptive and experiential education, but because of the way our school's set up, everyone gets the same thing the same time, and everyone who does have problems is afraid of something else.
Right. Have you ever seen something like that in play anywhere
I do. I mean, there's one school called Futures Academy, which is private, unfortunately. And they're all over the state of California, and that's their model. And I have lots of clients that have ended up there with D's and F's and behavior problems. And in a year, they have complete skill sets. Their lives are turned around. They're graduating high school, and they have a shot at becoming the man or woman they're supposed to be.
When you were talking earlier about how they could be brilliant, but they just can't focus.
Right.
That's what a lot of people say about, like, geniuses in history. Like, Albert Einstein didn't perform well in school.
Right.
And so it makes you think, like,
The ability to see the world different and the ability not to be able to pay attention is also a gift because it allows you to see things other people don't see. In my experience, people with attentional deficit, have this innate ability to understand other people before they even speak, have the ability to take a radio apart without reading instructions, and have the ability to form very close social emotional bonds with people very quickly. And that's a gift.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to have those? And just because someone can't learn the way everybody else learns, I mean, education isn't supposed to be like Costco. Right. And you shouldn't pick up your Riddle and like your $1.50 hot dogs on the way out. It's about potential.
Yeah, you're so right.
And there's all these studies now coming out about those drugs which say there's a likelihood they can lead to Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or things like that.
Really? That was actually a question I had for you because I was, in terms of long-term effects of medication.
Well, I'm not a doctor. I've studied medicine formally, but I'm not a doctor.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, these drugs haven't been around that long. Mm-hmm. And we're just finding out now that, you know, that which burns twice as fast lasts half as long. Mm. Yeah?
Yeah.
Right. So, and focusing is a skill, and it can be taught.
Yeah. You know, I was reading... at some point, because I mentioned to you previously that my husband and his brothers were medicated growing up, and because, you know, the school is saying, hey, they're not doing well in school, and we think that, you know, you should consider medication. And so, and as in a parent perspective, you're like, well, I just want them to pass, you know? And so, you know.
No, it's not that you want them to pass. You want them to become well-adjusted human beings that can face their challenges.
Yes, definitely, definitely. But from,
let me tell you this. The first time I took Ritalin, I talked about the negative experience. But it was like I put glasses on the first time. I could read, I could listen, and I could follow like never before. So I'm not knocking it, but at this time of my life, at 52, and the time I've spent researching... There's so many ways to get you to that point. The question is, do overworked parents have the time and the resources to do that for their children?
Yeah, and most parents would do anything that they could to help kid.
But most parents are tied to the ground. You know, I know I have families that have 4 disabled children. Mm-hmm. But that's the whole point of the school not recommending medication, because you want the school to give services to the child that is going to train them to pay attention, train them to focus, get them to that point.
Right.
See how well they can do. Let's look at the baseline data over a 3-year period, and then we can make a decision about medication.
Yeah. So one more point about, I was reading somewhere along the lines of this clinical psychologist was studying how, I guess they found like disparities in the diagnosis of ADHD in schools, like by state. And they were like, that's weird. Why does it differ by state? Like maybe a kid in Kentucky was 3 times more likely to be diagnosed than a kid in Nevada. And I guess the long of the short was that these, from what they found, the team that was studying this, the rates of kids being diagnosed with ADHD were correlated with school funding being tied to testing. Does that sound familiar to you at all? Like, does that sound like something that you've noticed?
There's some independent variables going on here that you're talking about. But different psychologists can get different results. But, you know, if you go to the Center for Disease Control's website, they really clearly lay out the hallmark factors of attentional ADHD and hyperactive ADHD. I mean, a lot of times the first time we'll notice it is when a kid's cutting themselves. Mm. And they're cutting themselves because they've become so anxious and their results in school have been so poor and they've been knocked down so much. And then all of a sudden they say, well, maybe the kid's got emotional problems. But the results of untreated ADHD can look like all types of mental illnesses. And even if you give medication, that doesn't mean you've treated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a situation that in a decision you can't make quickly. You know?
No, but if a parent hears it from a teacher, they're going to say, well, the teacher said it, the principal said it, the director of special education said it.
They work with kids all the time.
But why would you want to throw that into the mix and put that type of, you know, because that's like pressure. I mean, you take a poor family from the other side of town. They're living on food stamps. They've got six people living in an apartment. They don't have time to tutor their kid or help their kid. And the principal says, well, you know, he's acting out a lot. He's throwing his lunch across the room. You know, have you thought about medication? And they've got Medi-Cal or whatever they have, and doctors are willing to write it. But here's another thing, Kelly. Don't ever let a school tell you we don't have the resources to help that child, because that's not true. The education law squarely says it's not about resources, it's about need. And if you don't have them, you get them. And that's a lot of the work I do.
And that leads me to, with you coming in, I've learned about, I wrote this down, IDEA.
IDEA.
Individuals with Disabilities Act.
That's right.
That's all part of it.
It's everything.
Correct?
Well, yes and no. So IDEA is the Individuals with Disability Education Act, which is really our modern era special education law. And I don't like to call it special education. I like to say it's the law that helps with children who aren't meeting their potential. Mm-hmm. And the resources and the tools that are available to them and how they get it. First, we had the ADA, which didn't do much.
And was that the one that was signed into law by President Ford?
The American with Disabilities Act.
Okay.
And then, before that, special education was terrible. You know, states just had to do a little something, you know, like, oh, let me unpack your lunch for you, Johnny. Oh, he got an extra benefit that the other people didn't get, their special education. So it didn't do much. Then what happened is we had Section 504 of the Education and Rehabilitation Act. Huge watermark thing. We had all these people coming back from Vietnam, and they couldn't get work because they were so emotionally set back. No one would hire them. So law came into effect which said any of these people who were disabled by the war, if you receive federal funding in any way, you've got to hire these people. You cannot discriminate. Mm. And we started seeing that trickle down into the schools where kids couldn't walk up the stairs. So that law said you give them a ramp. Mm. And then we started just to see these enumerated conditions that apply to everybody. But it didn't really deal with the things that really get in the way of learning. And that's where IDEA came. IDEA said there are 16 conditions we're going to cover, and if a kid falls into one of them, it can be emotional, it can be physical, it can be intellectual, it can be cognitive, which all deals with reading and writing. And so mm-hmm. if the kid qualifies under any of those, they get what they need, quote, to reach their, now the law says, potential. And the law says now, and you must do it ambitiously.
Ambitiously.
Ambitious. And ambitious doesn't mean, hey, take your Adderall or, you know, take your Dexedrine. That's not ambitious. That is nothing.
What does that look like,
well,
ambitiously?
This is what happens. Let's say we've got a kid with ADHD, severe, but he's taking the medicine and it's not affecting him at school. Grades are good. But when he goes off the medicine, you know, at 4 o'clock at night, he starts bouncing off the wall, punching his little brother in the back and, you know, tapping his foot and not stopping. If it doesn't show up at school, it's not really the school's problem. So the fact that they're giving him medication is ameliorating the issue at school. And if the kid's getting decent grades at school, hence, it's not the school's problem. I like to say to my clients, let's let them see how your child does without medication. Let's let their, because look, at a school district, you have, I mean, especially here in Southern California, these are prized positions. You get, you know, psychologists from Harvard and Princeton and NYU and speech therapists and occupational therapists and cognitive therapists and mental health therapists. They're all there to do a job.
Right.
So why don't we let them do their job instead of saying, take a pill?
Okay, so you'll say, hey, send your kid to school. Take them off medication.
I would never advise taking anyone off medication. I can't do that. I'm not qualified. But what I can say to a parent is it's not the school's place to recommend medication.
Okay.
It's their place to recommend interventions, services, and support.
So by seeing a kid, maybe not necessarily medicated during the school day, though, they'll be able to better look at the kid and think, oh, well, maybe they should take the test in a more private setting.
Unless the parent brings the topic of medication up, unless the parent admits it, and when I say admit it, I don't mean in a negative way, but it's really nobody's business but your own.
So back to what IDEA ambitiously is supposed to provide.
Well,
what does that look like?
The word ambitious comes from a Supreme Court that was decided right here in our very own Ninth Circuit. For a long time, we had a case that really governed special education called Rowley. And what Rowley, you know, to sum it up quickly, and I'm leaving a lot out, it said that if you have a child with a disability, if they're passing grade to grade, that's okay. You don't really need to do much more for them.
Okay.
Which is kind of very limiting. But California always did a little more than that. Then a year and a half ago, we have Andrew come out and say, no, we want children's goals to be ambitious in light of their circumstances. The challenge with potential, and I keep saying it's the school's job to get the child to potential. Kelly, how do you define potential?
Just reaching, I mean, like doing the best that you physically, mentally, emotionally can.
Who determines what that is?
I mean, I think like yourself.
If you come to me and say, Adam, I want to reach my potential, what does that mean? Let me tell you what a school district says it means. And this isn't all school districts, but this is, you know, I have people who represent school districts who say to me, that kid's an 80. We don't know them much. They're never going to get better than C's and D's and D minuses. They're an 80. You know what an 80 is? An IQ score. So you still have, when I define potential, you know what I define it as? You can go where you want to go. You can be what you want to be. You can do what you want to do. That's how I define potential. I define potential as you pick a target and you overcome your challenges and you do everything you can to reach it, because that's why we're here. We are this incredible organism that can model and grow. But schools say, nope, we're going to do the intelligence testing. We're going to tell you based on those numbers what potential is. And that's and we don't even have to get you to that. We just got to get you to the middle of the road. That's not ambitious.
Right.
Is that clear?
Yeah. And I was just thinking, like, if I'm a teacher, from the teacher's perspective, the people who are with those kids every day, they're held to a standard based on those testing most of the time, right?
I don't look at it from a teacher's point of view.
Oh, of course you.
I don't look at it from a student, other student's point of view. I look at my client and I say, how does this kid become the man or woman they're supposed to be?
So back to IDEA and, you know, off the subject of medication. Let's say I am going to a school, going to talk to my kid's teacher and maybe the principal or whoever else is involved. IDEA can be in the form of like an IEP, right?
IDEA, the ultimate goal of IDEA is to result in an IEP.
Which stands for Individualized Education Plan.
Well done.
Thank you. And who's involved in that? You know, is there, typically there's like a team of people, right?
It's a multidisciplinary team that is composed of the people who test your child.
Yeah.
Your child's teacher, the special education, usually director from the school, an occupational therapist, a speech therapist, sometimes a behaviorist, a general education teacher, and a special education teacher, and then the family, and then me when I show up. And I show up a lot. I mean, most lawyers, they don't show up.
Yeah.
I get the most satisfaction.
That's how you get stuff done. You bring the attorney.
You show up.
Yeah.
And you don't beat your chest. You talk about science and you talk about data. And you don't let your clients be bullied. And they bully me. Mm-hmm. They bully me all the time. I'm the devil. You know, I have kids that in eighth grade have had straight D's and F's for their whole career. They've been promoted. And I show up and all of a sudden the district's singing Kumbaya. And, you know, I'm the man from hell.
Oh.
You know, who am I to show up and tell the school how to run themselves?
Right,
who is this? Who is this guy?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
But I talk the law and I'm specific, you know.
So I was reading this review on your website by a woman named Diana from Los Angeles. And she was talking a little bit about, I wrote it down, like part of what she said, because I'll read part of it. Both of my children, middle school and high school, have struggled in school with emotional and learning challenges. For years, the school counselor told us that there was nothing that the school could do to help us. Until I was referred to Adam. Hello, Adam. I didn't know how I would keep my children at grade level. I have had to bear the cost of outside tutoring for their entire academic lives. We didn't know that IEP and 504 plans existed. Let me stop there for a second. What's the difference between an IEP, which we were just talking about, and a 504 plan?
Think of it as finish lines. IEP eligibility is based on the child having a quantifiable disability. Mm-hmm. And there's 16 of them.
Okay.
Okay? And then what the school has to do, not only does the school have to provide services, supports, and interventions, they have to set goals for the child, like Kim will be able to do 4 math word problems that are 9 sentences each that involve division, multiplication, and decimal places on 3 out of 4 tries in a 2-week period. That's a goal. And once the school sets that goal, they are contractually bound to meet that goal. Mm. It's real therapeutic work with measurable results. And if the school misses the mark, in some cases it's actionable. I get to say to the school, you know, you owed Kim this. She didn't get it. She's 2 years older now. I want you to reach into your pockets, and I want mom to be able to go out in the world and get her something better.
And that could be in the form of a different
therapist,
school or
different. I mean, it all depends on the case. 504 is different. 504 is more like accommodations. Johnny has ADHD, but he's doing quite well, but he needs extra time.
Yeah.
He gets B's as it is, but if he had a reader or he had extra time, he could do better on his tests. Or I have another client with ganglion cysts in his wrists, and he can't handwrite or type, but he's very bright. So the school's saying he doesn't really need an IEP because we can't set goals for the cysts in his wrist, but we'll give him a note taker.
Gotcha. And that's the 504.
I mean, it gets kind of fuzzy.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, but you get a lot of schools that say, we can give this kid everything in a 504 that we can give him in an IEP, and we're kind of short staffed, so we're just going to do a 504. And I say, hold on a minute. You don't get to unilaterally downgrade something just based on your staffing. The statute is very clear.
Yeah.
And schools hold me to the letter of the law, so why shouldn't I hold them to the letter of the law?
So this is also an interesting part. She said, she continues with this. With Adam's help, we were able to put in place an IEP for my older child and 504 for my youngest. Ever since these plans were implemented for my children, it has been like night and day. She goes on to say, we even received reimbursement for many of our previous out-of-pocket expenses, which I'm thinking, did she mean like tutoring?
Possibly. I can't talk about that case specifically,
sure.
But I will explain if you would like me
yeah.
to.
Yeah, just when it comes to reimbursed.
So let's say we've got a young girl, and the parents have been writing the school. My girl scrambles the word. She makes word salad of her reading assignments. And when she writes, she reverses the letter. And the teacher says, well, you know, she's young. Let's wait and see what happens. But it keeps happening and happening. And the parents keep writing the district.
Yeah.
And I show up and I say, I want an evaluation. I want an assessment. I want to know what's really going on here. And lo and behold, people at the school didn't want to break a sweat. They didn't want to test this kid. So I say, look, you had notice. She's been in your domain for 5 years. Parents are out $18,000. You know, fair is fair. If you'd been giving her these services, they wouldn't have had to pay for them. So please pay them back.
Yeah.
Please, let's get along and work collaboratively and pay them back. And if they don't, the beautiful thing about this area of law is it's, if you've ever been in a lawsuit, you know what a horrible situation is. You know how much it costs. You know how long it takes. But for this area of law, it's very eloquent. There is a separate administrative body in our state. I can file a short complaint of 20 to 30 pages, and within a week, I have a mediator and a judge assigned to it. Within a month, we're in mediation, and within another 60 days, it's typically completely resolved. So start to finish, I'm done in 90 days.
Wow.
And if the data supports it, I'm usually right.
Wow.
So, and it's life-changing.
This, I feel like if you don't have an Adam Wasserman or someone like that in your life, it's very complicated because I'm very close with teachers, you know, people in my life are teachers, high school teachers, younger teachers, special education teachers, whatever. And those people that I know mean very well. I mean, it's their life. Well, so it's like, it just seems like such a complicated thing if...
Teachers are amazing.
Yeah.
I have teachers that, but for... I wouldn't be sitting here today. I wouldn't be the man I have. But I can't look at it from the teacher's point of view.
Oh, sure.
I have to look at it from my client's point of view. And it's very hard when a teacher has 40 kids. A lot of them are troubled. What are they supposed to do?
Yeah.
But the law is written for the client.
Yes.
For the student.
For a parent.
Yes. Especially with bullying. I mean, bullying's...
Yeah. Oh, no, no, go
Bullying's
ahead.
Bullying's
yeah.
a huge thing. I mean, I get these parents who call me up and they say, this kid's punching my kid. This kid's, you know, doing all this stuff. How do we stop that child? You know, he's getting in the way of my child's life. That kid needs to be on medication. You know, parents say that to me and I say, don't want to go there.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to get a school district to do something about another child. I've had... bounty hunters show up at schools with guns and badges serving subpoenas on gang members because you cannot instruct schools what to do with other children. I can't say to the school, I want you to deal with that kid. It just doesn't work that way. But what I can say is, I need this child protected. I need a construct around him so other people can't touch him. I need therapy so we rebuild this child's self-image and we start integrating the post-traumatic memories.
Mm-hmm.
So... it's all about my client. And in doing so, they'll have to deal with the other issues. But I can't force them. I can't just show up.
Do you find that in your experience in dealing with cases like this, that most bullying situations go unresolved?
Well, you know, if you talk about a general education student that doesn't have any of those disabilities, unless they're really harmed... the school doesn't owe you much.
Mm.
What I do is I look at someone that's been bullied chronically and I get them tested. And I say, do we see perseveration here? Do we see anxiety or depression? Do we see compulsions? Do we see cutting? And if we do, they're covered by the disability statute. And then all of a sudden, the school has to protect them. So when someone's been hurt, we need to know where to focus our efforts. You know, I see families that file school district complaints about bullying, and the bullying's been going on, but the district comes back and says, doesn't meet our definition of bullying, sorry. We'll work with you, but it's not really happening. But I can take that same kid, get them tested by a clinical psychologist, and see their anxiety and their depression is off the charts, and all of a sudden, they're in my domain, and I can help them tremendously.
Yeah, and I imagine you can't get good grades if you're coming to school scared of people.
Or you can get good grades and go home and slice your arms and your legs up at the end of the day and nobody will see it until you get an infection and you end up half dead in the hospital, which I see. I have cheerleaders who are tortured, mm-hmm. that become bulimic, that end up 5150 because of suicide. It's like water. You ever hear the expression, weak as water? Water always finds its way out. It has to. It'll break pipes. It'll break concrete. It's the same thing with bullying. When it's bad, it always finds its way into the child's psyche and manifests itself in one form or another. And if it happens on the grounds of a school or on grounds that's related to the school and it is hurting a child, it is the school's responsibility.
It seems like with social media and smartphones, that might get...
oh, it's horrible.
Hairy.
Oh, it is. I mean, the intensity of it is nonstop. And children kind of forget that they're on that, and they start swearing and calling people miserable names, and people get these things in the middle of class. I mean, I had one client that was drawing pictures of her hanging herself in the middle of class. Oh, this is a smart kid. This kid's got great A's, you know, A's. Yeah. There's no problem here. So I go to the school, I open the notebook, and I say, and it's in red, and it says help on the page.
Oh, and the school didn't say anything?
I mean, no, not until I show them that. Nothing. You know, and, you know, schools get attorneys, just like insurance companies get attorneys, and they fight me. Not all of them. A lot of them are really well-meaning, caring people, but you know, you get these districts that are strapped, and I show up and they're like, here's Adam, it's going to cost us 40 grand, put this fire out.
Right.
But they're not all like that. I work with some incredible people who work for school districts, so they're not all bad. In fact, some of them are very good. And a lot of these school district attorneys will be the first ones to say to a school district, you messed up here, we need to make it right. So I do a lot of work in Northern California. I have an advocate down there. Her name is Mary Pateso. And, you know, the schools down there are very underfunded. And things go on there for years and years and years until we show up. And, you know, the districts will say, where are we supposed to get the money to pay for this, Adam? Not my problem.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is this child who missed out on 6 years of core skill development.
So before we wrap up, if there was just like a message, a general message for parents who are maybe their kids having a tough time in school, do people ask you like general, hey, What's the next step?
Well, look,
should I just
set up
a meeting?
Kelly, there's a tough time and there's a tough time. Is a kid upset about an A minus instead of an A? That's not a tough time.
Right.
That is unhappy.
Yeah.
Everybody's a little bit unhappy. If a child's having a tough time, it's usually not their fault. Children don't want to be lazy. Children don't want to get into trouble. Children want to grow up and be successful. Don't let teachers blame your child. Don't let them gaslight you that it's your fault. Come see me or someone about like me, and we can get to the bottom of it, and then you can make informed decisions, because you got one chance to raise your child, and your school district has one chance to raise them as well. And your goals and your child's potential should be in harmony with what they can do for you.
I like it.
Great.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you enjoyed the show or think someone else might benefit from hearing the episode with Adam, please share it. Better yet, leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this. It really helps. Okay. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.